I'm Gary Latson, MD. My title, I'm a retired anesthesiologist. Before retirement, I was an associate professor with Texas A&M University College of Medicine, and I worked at a hospital called Baylor Scott & White Hospital in Temple, Texas, and I was the head of anesthesia for neurosurgery. So that's my specialty is anesthesia for neurosurgery cases. I've been doing anesthesia for about 40 years, and then I finally retired last year.
Now, could you talk to the kids about your role and your background, share a bit about your son and your story? Because they've studied about your bio a little bit, the kids that are here, and I know the kids listening as well, and just kind of get into that.
Okay, so 3 years ago, May 11th, 2022, my 37-year-old son was taking what he thought was cocaine and was found in his dead in his apartment. And autopsy showed that he died of a fentanyl overdose mixed with cocaine. My suspicion is that he was not aware that there was fentanyl in the cocaine, and he was using the cocaine. He was a computer science, a computer software architect, and I think he sometimes would use stimulants to help him, binge work in computer coding. He had been. He was a brilliant young man. He had reached very high levels in the computer software industry. He had worked with Raytheon for several years and then was his own contractor, ran his own business in computer software architecture consulting, was doing very well in that, and was also involved in some entrepreneurial ventures about cryptocurrency with distributed financing, with using cryptocurrency, was setting up the architecture for that for some startup companies. He had been doing very, very well for months, had been on probation for some legal issues, and then thought his probation was coming to an end. So he thought that he had taken his last drug test about the probation, decided to go to the casinos in Puerto Rico with some friends. They got some coke, what they thought was cocaine, and that basically was the beginning of the end of his life. So his he got a hold of some cocaine that probably had a lot of fentanyl in it, and that killed him.
Can you, from your professional opinion, and we're so sorry about your son, and thank you for sharing that with the kids and all the listeners. Can you share a bit professionally as far as the role of fentanyl and exactly even how the smallest dose can be completely deadly?
Okay, so the ironic thing is, as an anesthesiologist, I've administered fentanyl probably tens of thousands of times. Fentanyl is a very, very valuable adjunct or part of modern anesthesia because fentanyl is very potent at blunting the response of the body to pain. So anesthesiologists administer it in very carefully controlled doses as part of anesthesia to prevent the body from responding to surgical stimulus. If you administer fentanyl in the right amounts, you can literally do heart surgery, basically under the influence of fentanyl. But the key is that fentanyl also stops a person from breathing. So, when anesthesiologists administer fentanyl, we immediately take over the patient's breathing and keep them alive by putting in an airway and supporting their breathing. And when we do that, fentanyl is an incredibly valuable drug. It's probably a component of about 90% of anesthetics administered today. So, it's ironic that my son died of a drug that I've administered hundreds of times, thousands of times, and that's such a valuable drug in the right hands. Unfortunately, when fentanyl is used illicitly, the dosing is completely unpredictable. So fentanyl is so potent that in anesthesia, it's administered in micrograms. The DEA considers 2 milligrams to be lethal. I would say that that's actually more than lethal if it's administered intravenously or in an uncontrolled circumstance. The problem on the street is that from one dose of a pill or a powder that contains fentanyl, the actual amount of fentanyl can vary by tens or even hundreds of times. And so a person tries to use a dose of fentanyl, and the margin of error is so tiny that if they get it just a little bit wrong, it makes them stop breathing and can kill them. So fentanyl, as provided in illicit drugs, is incredibly dangerous because it is so potent that it's very, very hard to control the dosing.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing your professional observations with that. What are some important steps would you say that are that students can take when it comes to keeping themselves and friends safe?
Well, number one, never trust anything that doesn't come from a registered pharmacy to, with a doctor's prescription, because anything that is sold illicitly can contain fentanyl, and the amount of fentanyl that's in it is completely unpredictable. And I tell my students that the most dangerous thing on the planet is a white powder. Cocaine, methamphetamine, crack, any of those things, ecstasy, any of those things sold as a white powder to be snorted or mixed or, used intravenously, it's likely to contain fentanyl now because fentanyl is the cheapest and most potent thing for the cartels to use. And so they mix fentanyl into basically anything that's provided on the street. And it's the amount of fentanyl in anything on the street is just completely unpredictable. So I would say that, drugs from the street now are just so dangerous. It's literally Russian roulette every time you try to take anything that is provided from on the street. You never know what's in it, you never know how much is in it, and it could kill you. You might get away with it 100 times, but the 101st time, it might kill you.
Yeah, it's disturbing. And guys, to learn more, definitely check out fentanylfathers.org. We'll have that linked in this video and in the interview. I'm going to introduce our other guest, and we're going to come back to you, Dr. Latson, because we do have some questions from the kids. And I want to unmute Greg. Greg, I'm going to do what's called spotlight your video so you're all that the kids see. Can you hold on? Let me unmute you. There you go. There you go. Okay, so Greg, if you could just tell us your first and your last name and your background, and share with us your story.
Sure. And Ralph, thanks for having us on and bringing attention to this. My name is Greg Swan. I'm a co-founder of a group called fentanylfathers.org. We go around and we talk to as many high schools as we can. We want to talk to every high school in the country and warn them just how Gary did. In kind of a structured format that's very emotive, it hooks people in, and there you go. Do you want me to go into detail about that?
Well, I would like to say, could you share with us about your son and what brought you to this organization? It's an amazing organization. You guys have literally saved lives. And I think spreading awareness as much as we can to the furthest corners of the earth, and that's the whole goal of these discussions, to save lives is absolutely paramount. So can you share with us what brought you to this organization?
Sure, it for sure it's the urgency and the importance of it. It ranks number one, with second place being a far distant second place in terms of our priorities to solve a problem in this country, if your goal is to stay alive, because it is by far the number one killer of young people in America. Last year, we're getting numbers that were dipped below 100,000. When it went over 100,000 a couple of years ago, this would forced it hoisted its way onto the national awareness psyche, and we got attention from the president at the time was Biden. He had a fentanyl father stand up at the State of the Union, and it was finally being talked about. It's a little divisive to talk about fentanyl because we try to stay out of politics because politics are divisive. And I love what Michael Jordan said about politics, man. He said, Republicans buy shoes too. Doesn't matter what side of the coin you're on. I wouldn't want to, lend credence either way on that. But the talking about fentanyl was also akin to saying that the border was open and it's coming in. With 110,000, 107,000 in 2022 and 2023 dying. In 2024, it dipped below 100,000, but it's still in the last since 2019, there's been a half a million young people dying from fentanyl, and that's a million bereaved parents, guys like me and Gary, Gary and I, if that's more appropriate, are just really just we're so sad by having lost our kids. We happen to love our kids. I just got off the phone with a guy named Nick Redondo. He's another fentanyl father. He said he was coming back from the dentist and he'd heard his son's voice and it just broke down and cried. It's such an empty feeling. So the way to deal with this almost indescribable pain of losing a child because you hurt in places you didn't even know you had places is you got to get out and do something about it to kind of fight back. And what can you do? I was kind of crazy. The first couple of years after I lost Drew, I'd be happy to share the story about it. But I was in my mind was trying to solve a problem I didn't have a solution to. And that problem was I wanted to get back to Drew. And there's no way to do that. He's passed on. The next time I'll see him, I happen to be a believer, is in heaven. And he was a believer, so I hope we meet at the same place. I certainly plan on it. But in terms of losing Drew, I spent a lot of time recently with the coroner. I lost him on April 3rd, which, by the way, for any historian, happens to be the same day Jesus died on April 3rd. It was a Friday at 3 o'clock, but you can check that out later. But he died on April 3rd, but it was 2013. The testing for fentanyl was sparse back then. It really didn't kick in earnest until 2016. I was told by the coroner medical examiner he likely fentanyl was likely involved with his passing, but they only had some precursors in their testing attributed to Drew. The other thing that he had was methadone in his system. He took an unpre he did exactly what Gary said to not do. He took an unprescribed pill not prescribed to him, and it cost him his life. We think he got it from his roommate. He was found with a therapeutic or a sub-therapeutic amount of methadone in his system, and we are kind of anecdotally and circumstantially attributing the other part to fentanyl. Either way, by 2022, it had gotten so bad, this was slaughtering Americans' youth. I decided that I was no longer going to pull for any politician. I was going to get out and do something and tell young people directly about it. So we get in, we ask to open up schools. We're like, This is your top priority. It's not a niche problem. It's not schedule it in 3 months. Get us in as soon as possible and let us talk to these kids about it. I start out every assembly, which gets a lot of attention, by saying, "Hey kids, I'm here on a sad mission. I lost my son to this." And I'll point it to the screen. Then we have some really award-winning, attention-getting PSAs, public service announcements, that we created from a guy who did six Super Bowl commercials. Those come in. They show 279 die in a day. Shows Russian roulette, just like playing Russian roulette with a gun, only loading the gun with Adderall pills, things like that. And then we show an emotive movie, an award-winning movie. It's available on our home site called fentanylfathers.org. It's called Dead on Arrival. I highly recommend everybody watch Dead on Arrival on our homepage. You'll cry. It's 22 minutes long, the full version. It's also dubbed into Spanish, if anybody prefers that. And it really locks you in. After that, we train people how to recognize, respond to an overdose. We show them how to, the simple squeezing of Narcan or naloxone into their nostril is how you reverse an overdose. If you're in that situation, we take a vow, "I'll never try, so I'll never die," from fentanyl. We give away, in every assembly, we give away this book. This book is called Victoria's Voice. This particular one is signed by the whole family of Victoria to me, but the book is written by Victoria, who died. And what's cool about it is it's her journal. It's her personal journal. We give that away to every single student who attends our assembly. And then I would also recommend for your viewers, anybody who wants to, if you want to have us donate a box, they come in boxes of 32 to your school, let Ralph or myself know. And we'd be happy to ship that to you free of charge. There's another book that's available for download right away on our home site called 1001 Great Comebacks to Peer Pressure. Peer pressure is real. In the 1980s, the First Lady of the United States was pushing this agenda, saying, "Just say no to drugs." Well, this is 1001 ways to say no, but make the other person feel like an idiot, which I think is fair because they're trying to kill you. And some of these comebacks are like, "No thanks, I'm trying to graduate this year," or, "I don't want a side of death with my fun on Friday night." There's 1001 of those, and they're very, very punchy and powerful. And it's good to be prepared so that you look like the smart guy and they look like the idiot, which is they are if they're pushing anything that might kill you. And so Xanax, Percocet, OxyContin, Adderall, they're all available in fake form on Snapchat, and kids are ordering them up and dying. Their parents come in, find them with cold feet and collapse. That's the most common thing I hear. I found my kid dead. I like WTF. And so and then it's also the opportunity here. Something I struggled with, I'm in recovery myself, in high school, was marijuana. This isn't your grandpa's marijuana. This isn't your dad's medical marijuana. It's not your grandpa's Woodstock weed. It is very suspect and a lot of times laced with fentanyl. In California, 60, 80% of the dispensaries get their weed from cartels in California. Most of the dispensaries are regulated. It is the only semi-safe place to obtain marijuana. If you're getting it on the street, you're playing with your life in your hands. I just took an Uber to an airport and flew back here recently, and the gal in the Uber was sharing with me that her husband has prescription of marijuana, a prescription for Xanax, and Suboxone, and he literally runs out of Xanax because it's an addictive drug. So he goes and buys it from someone he trusts. I said to the Uber driver, I said, "Well, you know what? Tell your husband from me. Bye-bye-o. See ya." I give him a life expectancy of a couple weeks. It's just only a matter of time before he comes across a Xanax that claims to be a Xanax but is laced with fentanyl. of which over 50% of the, according to the DEA, has fentanyl in it. So after our assembly, we say together, on behalf of our kids, I'll never try, so I'll never die from fentanyl. And we graduate these kids fentanyl-free and fentanyl-certified. Speakers at our event are easy to get because there's so many parents with deceased children from this. And the hard part is just setting up the school. So that's it. It's urgent. It's important. It's slaughtering our youth. And
Yeah.
we're just trying to hit the brakes on this thing.
No, that's good. And you guys are making a lot of headway in that. And the kids you're speaking to right now, they're all in Spain. They all speak English. And I'm gonna pass this question off. This is Angel. This is for you, Greg. And then after same question to you, Gary. After Greg answers, Angel, you should be able to unmute to ask your question. It was pretty specific.
Love her name.
Thank you. Hello.
Oh, Angel.
Yeah. I'm really sorry for your loss. Okay.
Thank you.
I want to ask you about the situation in Philadelphia. Do you think certain neighborhoods are more affected by fentanyl? And what could the city do to help people there?
Thanks, Angel. I take it I gather you're asking because you know somebody in Philadelphia or something. You're obviously asking for a reason. Philadelphia, first of all, we created something called angelarmy.com, and we'd love anybody to join angelarmy.com, named after you and people who had passed on to get involved with us. First of all, xylazine is came out of Philly, and it's quite popular. It's a and Gary's going to know more because he's a doctor, but it's a it's used in animals. It's used for veterinary purposes. It extends the life of fentanyl. It also puts holes in your skin, and you end up being able to see. I mean, it kills you. It slowly kills you. And I just talked to a guy whose friend was. It was a dentist, and he treated a guy who was addicted to it. And he said, all they want is their drug. Once you get hooked on this thing, it supersedes all your motives. You just want to get that drug. And that's why we say, I'll never try, so I'll never die from it. Philadelphia gave really birth to it, and it spread, but it hasn't spread in the quantities that fentanyl has, but it has spread quite a bit. Gary, would you like to add to that?
Sure. So, like Greg said, Philadelphia became so famous because it was really the first place where they started mixing this drug called xylazine with the fentanyl. Xylazine is a veterinary sedative that they use to sedate dogs and horses and things like that when they have to do a procedure. When it's illicitly mixed with street fentanyl, it prolongs the high. So fentanyl on its own only lasts a few minutes to an hour, from a single dose. And so it's one of the reasons it's so addictive was that it wears off quickly and they want more. Well, the dealers figured out that if they added some of this cheap veterinary drug to the mix, that it would produce a longer lasting high, which the customers liked. And it was kind of it's like taking a margarita and a pill, something like that. It accentuates the high from fentanyl, and the customers, quote unquote, liked it. But it had devastating side effects, particularly when it was injected, because it causes skin necrosis at the injection site and leads to horrific wounds. So that problem sort of originated or first became really in the community in Philadelphia, and has spread to other places. There are some other places in the country where that's being seen as well, but not as much as in Philadelphia.
We did a round table in Philadelphia. It got covered by the news by a bunch of bereaved parents. But I can tell you in Pennsylvania, you got a real sympathetic senator there. We feel like we helped him get elected because we did a round table that got covered by the networks in Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and Philly. And his name is McCormick, Dave McCormick. If you want anything in terms of being active, talk to Dave McCormick. Individually, we are encouraging people to start something called a SAFE group, Students Advocating Fentanyl Education, so that everybody in your school knows where fentanyl is. They know how to recognize, respond to an overdose, and they also know how to fight back effectively with really good zinging comebacks to peer pressure. So, anyways, they're available. You can check them out at fentanylsafe.org, fentanylsafe.org. And if you ever want to hit me up, I'm Greg at fentanylfathers.org. Gary's Gary at fentanylfathers.org. And the guy for Philadelphia is Nick, N-I-C-K, at fentanylfathers.org. We're all volunteer. We do this because we have to. The grief is killing us. And
Sure.
so we want to get out. And Angel, thank you for your condolences. It means a lot to me. And then Gary as well, I'm sure.
And we can't thank you guys enough. We're going to go with a couple more student questions. Is that all right? Because it's getting kind of late in Europe. One of the kids wanted to know what changes, and we'll start with you, Greg, and then go to you, Gary. What changes would you guys like to see in laws or policies to help prevent fentanyl-related deaths? Because I know they're different based on states.
Well, we've happily, I just did a history of the legislation on this. The CARA Act, which was started by somebody from Victoria's Voice, started in 2016. My wife ran for Congress. We got a law passed called the Support Act, which was for opioid overdoses. And then last week, we just got a law passed called Bruce's Law. It was done by one of our co-founders for Fentanyl Fathers, Sandy Snodgrass. It sat there and got through the Senate and the House, and it's been voted on, and it's waiting up. It's waiting signature by the president, which will support all schools from opening up and having this type of education so the kids know about it. It really should be mandated. It's mandated in states like Texas and California, where you have to come in and warn these kids. We're not. I'm a believer. I know a lot of people. I know Ralph is, but we're not selling church and Boy Scouts as an alternative to a risky lifestyle. This is life and death. This is a non-starter. You can't go near this stuff. It'll kill you. Young people love to take risks. I tell them, throw your precious body, you little Einstein, off the side of a mountain. That's called base jumping. You'll only die 1 in 5,000 times. This is 1 in 2, sometimes 8 in 10. So it's pretty bad. Go ahead, Gary. I turn it over to you.
I got you, Gary. Go ahead.
Let's see, we were talking about
The
what
policies
other
and laws, like, what do you guys want to see?
So I think, like Greg said, I think mandating really effective education and awareness is very, very important. It's a whole lot better to prevent young people from ever starting down the road of substance use than it want because once they get into that lifestyle, it's very, very difficult to get them out. And particularly once somebody becomes addicted to an opioid, it's extremely difficult to overcome that addiction. It's not impossible. There are medical treatments that are very effective, but it's a whole lot better to prevent it than by educating young people about how dangerous it is than to try to treat it afterward. Other things that can be done policy-wise is certainly to try to decrease the supply. Over and over, history shows that if you flood a society with an addictive drug, that more people will use it and get exposed to it and get addicted. And that's really what has happened to America in the last decade, is that they have flooded America with fentanyl. So stopping or reducing the supply, trying to throttle that back is certainly part of the solution. It's not the whole solution, but it's part of it. And then the other thing is making treatment more available, more fair, more attainable by insurance coverage, free clinics, all those things, telemedicine, making it easier for someone once they do develop a problem. Making it easier for them to access effective treatment. So all of those things have to come together. And then, like Greg mentioned, naloxone is very, very important. Having naloxone should be just as available as defibrillators. I mean, there's every store, every nightclub.
Brand name is Narcan.
Yeah, Narcan. Every place where kids congregate, concerts, nightclubs, game rooms, anything like that should have Narcan available. Kids should know how to use it.
We're building out something called NarcanNow.us, just showing where it's available in the US. But there should be a zero tolerance policy, or yeah, zero tolerance policy for kids dying. This is a preventable death. There's other stuff you got to deal with kids, it's stress and anxiety. They spend 3.5 hours a day on their iPhones on things they can't control. It gives them stress and anxiety. And they need to know numbers like calling 988, either in the States. That is a place to walk them off the ledge. This one is preventable. There's no assemblies needed for not drinking gasoline. Everybody knows that's poison. People need to view an unprescribed pill as like that's like gasoline. They have to know that. They don't know that. And that's basically what we're trying to enlighten them on. Very simple. It's a very tight focus.
We'll do one more question. And this comes from one of our kids. They want to know if every student watching or listening today remembers just one message from you, what would it be? And we'll start with you, Greg, and then have Gary end it.
Well, I'm going to call out your parents. They love you more than they're letting on. Okay? Because they really can't afford to lose you, because if they do, that bullet takes out not only you, but it takes out both your parents. I mean, it's so hard to come back from it. And so one of the biggest motivations for kids is they don't want to do this to their parents. So you need to be smart. You've gotten the memo. There's no excuse. You know that unequivocally ordering anything online, taking anything unprescribed that doesn't have your name on it from your doctor is a non-starter. It's an absolute hard no. And that way you won't die from fentanyl. Now, you're not going to get out of this world alive. Something's going to take you out. But this is one way we can take off our plate to never happen. You're in control of it. It's super simple. We love you guys. That's why we do this. And we try to get you aware of this in the name of our own kids. It gives Drew's purpose, his passing, some purpose, as well as Trevor. Go ahead, Gary.
Absolutely. And the other message I would like to get out is that we can provide awareness and education to small groups of people at different times, but we're not as effective as each of you are. Each of you can convince your friends if you start to see them doing these risky things. If you're at a party and somebody's passing out what's supposed to be ecstasy, or somebody's trying to give you Xanax or give you Adderall or anything, or a white powder, cocaine.
Percocet.
Cocaine completely adulterated with fentanyl. You can warn your friends. You can magnify the effect that Greg and I have by passing that message on to all of your friends. And when you see them, just say, "Don't do it. Don't be stupid. This is so dangerous. It can kill
It's
you." So,
suicide.
right. It's slow suicide. So, we're part of the solution, but you guys are even more, because you can have more influence on your peers than we can.
I want to add, this can happen to anybody. It's my best friend since, many of you students know me, at least like the listeners and stuff like that. My best friend since kindergarten passed away a number of years ago from fentanyl, and in Lincoln Park, Michigan, and ironically where I was born, the city where I was born. But seeing his parents grieve, seeing Greg and Gary and all of these parents grieve. There's something that you guys as students can do about it now. And as tacky as this sounds, just say no. You don't need that. No one needs that stuff. And I'm glad that we can bring this to you guys. We see Greg with his son's photo right there. And guys, check out fentanylfathers.org and be vocal, be brave enough to be vocal to talk about this with your friends and stand up and say no to that.
One thing I
Yeah.
wanted to say about Drew, which I didn't share, he was a 160 IQ, that's two below Einstein, and he was an Abercrombie model, and he was a state champion as a freshman. It wasn't fair to be this guy, yet he's not here. Nobody's above this thing. You got to get smart about it. So I really appreciate you guys hearing us out. And Ralph, I'm sorry about the loss of your friend, a Michigander, where I'm talking to everybody from. And you guys are too smart for this now. This won't happen to you. Go home, share it with your parents. Check out the movie on the homepage of fentanylfathers.org. Download that free book right away. Drew helped start writing it before he passed. Thank you.
Ralph, the homework assignment ought to be for all these kids to watch the movie Dead on Arrival on the Fentanyl Fathers homepage. It really is a very moving movie. It's what we start our presentations with, and it's got a lot of great information, but it also has it'll touch your heart.
Yeah,
So
very
strongly
much.
recommend to watch that movie.
Check that out at fentanylfathers.org. Now, before I let everyone go, before I end the meeting for all, I'm going to ask those of you who are here live, go ahead and unmute. Can we all say thank you to Gary and Greg for sharing their stories with us today? Thank you guys so much.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
you. Bye.
Our pleasure. Thanks a
Bye.
ton, guys.
Stay
God
safe.
bless.